Start running the meter.
But of the 30 people out there, I only recognize
two. You're out of the... Yeah.
But how many recognize you?
That's different.
That's different, yes. Well,
I've just spent the last...
Oh. Yep, yeah, right.
Oh.
It's still 2 o'clock. So good afternoon. Welcome, everyone. Today is March 9th, 2017. It's Thursday. It's 2 p.m. It's a general discussion for the Board of Commissioners. Commissioner Young called and said he's going to be on his way. In the meantime, we don't have a whole lot in preparation for this meeting, but I do think it's a good opportunity to kind of review what coordination is and what it isn't, and I think we can lay some groundwork about what our long-term vision and plan for implementing a coordination. We have a coordination plan, and really how it's carried out is through a coordination committee. But maybe we hold off on that conversation until Commissioner Young gets here.
Okay.
It shouldn't be too long. Anything you wanted to chat about?
Well, I just spent the last 2 hours at Public Health, and I think it was a very positive experience. So they had an employee recognition, and where they provided lunch, Casa Amiga catered, and it was paid for individually, though. It wasn't, I don't know that it was one of those things that they invited everybody in and acknowledged work and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And I think it was a good team building opportunity, and then to have me there and just kind of, there was more staff than I'd seen before.
Mm-hmm.
There's definitely still some areas that we need to continue having discussions with, as far as just one thing I've remembered hearing from other departments is oftentimes departments within the county that are not located here in the courthouse do not feel they have the same access to the support services that those in the courthouse have. So I had a staff member mention that they do court runs every day, and they see HR or finance going around the loop and checking in. And they said, what would it do if HR came to these outer departments once a week and just said, hey, just checking in. How you guys doing?
Did they feel like they've done something wrong because it's such an anomaly? Maybe the first time they do it.
The first time. But building that access and that relationship so they don't feel like they're kind of the redheaded stepchild. And I remember when I worked at the city, there were divisions that felt that way as
mm-hmm.
well, that City Hall had their potlucks and their parties and their blah, 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 and everybody else was working.
Mm-hmm.
And so just kind of interesting opportunity of, hey, maybe we let HR know that they would like access to them as well and see how that goes. But overall, touching base with several employees was positive, and
good.
I thought that would be worth sharing.
The admin meeting was really good from kind of putting some stuff together about a long-term vision for, you know, not just out of the public safety thing that came
yeah.
up, but you know, for public health, and that will drive the conversation that we had the other day about what we see is the best fit for public health in the future of this community,
mm-hmm.
and what are our partners that make sense that we, you know, kind of relationships we expand upon. But I think we're taking that, you know, Public Works is doing that with a performance review, and long-term strategy as a result of that review of what is our foundation. Forestry's already done that with their inventory and talking about what their long-term view is. Parks is working on that right now with their strategic plan. And Public Works is doing that with doing the System Transportation Improvement Plan. That's a 10-year plan. So looking at those other things that we need to do, if law enforcement does that, there's very few other areas of the county that probably need to, is talk about, you know, what's the long-term goal of community corrections. Maybe that's the easiest one in the book. It's like, it's going to be...
And I don't know that it is. I do like the idea that I had Colleen Martin from the Chamber offer to help the county with visioning.
Mm-hmm.
She said she had gone to a conference and first had heard of the 2020 vision planning. And I know Cave Junction has done that with their plan out there that Ivy Community Development Organization
mm-hmm.
is kind of taking forward. But she had offered it to the city at one point, and they started down that road and kind of went another path. But she was encouraged by our progress with the summit on Tuesday. And
yeah.
she felt that we had a lot more progress and loved the idea of the visioning. But I think it starts with us setting the 30,000-foot place.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're, you know, at some point, I still think as legal, you should convene a charter review committee.
Oh, well, I have been down that road, as it turns out. Happy to tell the story. Yeah, it was one thing I did right off the bat when I got you into the Charter Review Committee. Yeah. And I think you made an appearance or two. And so, yeah, we made a deliberate effort for a variety of reasons. You know, pretty much everybody you talk to between Helen Scott, Paul Walter, and everybody between Rafferty agrees that the Charter is...
woefully.
Yes,
outdated.
Woefully outdated. And
well, how about just the typos? I mean...
There's a lot of issues. So, yes. So, yeah, I mean, getting consensus at least that level is the easy part. Okay, so the way legally you can review or you can basically overhaul the charter is you only really have one course that the board would be kind of active on, and it goes like this. So the charter can only be amended or repealed by the initiative process, strictly through the initiative process. So the board cannot refer measures, a charter amendment, nor can you. It is.
Okay.
It is. So the charter itself limits the way in which it can be amended or revised or repealed. And so you're stuck with this charter, but the board also has the option of kind of setting up a charter committee, which would create an entirely new document, and that committee would have the authority to send it to the clerk. And the committee would consist of...
The committee can send it to the clerk without an initiative?
Yes.
Or it would just still...
The committee can refer. The committee could refer it to the clerk.
Wow. So it's not even going through us. It's going through the clerk.
No, by design.
Through us. It's the whole deal is a degree of separation between we just set that committee up and they
go with it.
Go forth and do
their thing. It's a very unusual committee in terms of its makeup. It's going to have four members that are appointed by the board. Four members that are appointed by the legislative delegation, talking about the charter issue.
We were looking at, you know, we're doing visioning elements and a lot of things, and then we talked about maybe that's a goal for this year, is we start with the visions for stuff, and then we got into the you know, legal stuff.
I brought up the charter.
It's the charter.
Yes.
That's a huge one, but you know what?
Captain of that.
It's really at the forefront of a lot of people. You know, they say that charter is just outdated.
Oh yeah, you can get ready consensus that the charter needs to be fixed.
Agrees.
That's the easy part. I was just saying. So, but in terms of actually making that happen, the only way the charter can be amended, revised, or repealed is through the initiative process. So the board doesn't have any discretion in terms of that level. But what you do have discretion to do is you would have to work in tandem with a citizens group, and you can create a committee that would be supported by, you know, as much myself and anyone else from the county that you want to support the committee formally. And the committee could craft an entirely new document, and the committee has the authority to send the new document to the ballot, but the only way the new document can replace the existing charter would be if, in concert with that, a citizens group were to circulate an initiative that would repeal the current charter. And so you would have a repeal and a replacement on the same ballot. It's kind of awkward, but
you'd have to repeal one before you could
What would happen if the replacement passed but the repeal did not?
You'd put language in the ballot measure that it would make it contingent.
Okay.
This one is only repealed if the replacement passes. It's not just taking
and amending the current charter. You have to write a new one.
Yeah, if the board wants to have a hand in that.
Yeah,
and
you can't amend the charter right now. The citizens can say we want to add item 26.2 that says that no legal counsels can be a black hair.
Then I'm out.
Done.
And they can do it.
We'll figure it out.
better a full head of black or gray. It is, but better a full head of gray.
That was my grandfather's prayer.
Now, but I think to get comprehensive review of where we have somewhat of a tangential input into it, establishing this committee, and then let it go do its thing, you'd have to have another group.
I don't think you'd have a hard time getting.
No, seven people.
So it's four. It's four from the board, four from legislative delegation, and then those eight select a ninth member.
Oh, okay.
There's one more wrinkle in all this that I want to make sure and point out while I'm thinking about it, which is that there is the single subject rule that limits what the initiative petition can do to the charter. And so it's not as though you can have a citizens group that just says, we're going to do the whole replacement, because I think that would not fly. Someone would challenge it inevitably, and the single subject rule would prohibit them from just sort of gutting and stuffing the whole charter.
In the context of repealing the entire thing?
That they can do. They can repeal the entire... That's what I'm saying.
That's one issue?
Yes.
But replacing the whole thing is not one issue?
Not an issue. Yeah, not allowed.
Not just one issue.
That would be beyond the single subject rule. Yeah, a little bit of a difference there. You're asking them to vote on one subject.
Right, right.
It should be repeal versus, you know, we're going to overhaul the whole thing.
Yeah.
Yes.
Much of other stuff.
Yes. So, different experience than you had with the city, because I think you all did revise your charter.
Well, theirs is easy.
Right.
Yeah. Well, ours had different challenges. We had just come out of having five counselors recalled. So for me, it was important that we had representation on that committee that was from the recalled group as well as the non, so that we can bring both sides. But you're right, it was able to be put to vote by the council.
We could make recommendations to that committee about issues that we see that need to be addressed. For me, it's the governance over an elected official who has been recalled. In that situation, I experienced it, and there was no authority granted to the board to do anything special to give that commissioner either additional rights or the county protection. You know, we have somebody who theoretically did not so good things, and the citizens have spoken. They're still here for 20 days, 10 days to be certified, and then, you know, it was a long time. And there was potential stuff that could have been done in that interim, and there was a number of different steps along the way that should have been better.
Can they be put on like a leave of absence or anything of that sort while you certify the election?
I don't believe so. I don't know. We've never tried it.
It's not, that's just it. It's our authority is in the charter. I had some folks on Facebook today saying, get rid of Simon Hare. He spends too much money. And my response at first was pretty frugal. Mm-hmm. They said, well, get rid of him. And I said, well, no elected commissioner has authority over another elected official.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the only way a commissioner leaves office is by resignation or recall. And so it's just kind of one of those things, but even
or
though
death.
That's not an option. I'm sorry, not allowing that one of any of us.
Mm-hmm.
Though nitroglycerin pills are in his keychain.
In my pocket. Right.
So if we ever need, we know his nitroglycerin is in his pocket.
Good.
Still not doing the mouth to mouth. I got my limits.
You don't have to.
Okay.
Yeah, you're going to die.
We're gonna
I did my first aid CPR research yesterday,
okay.
And
good.
You are allowed to just pump away.
You mentioned something about the defibrillators. And
yes.
We've addressed that in the past and reached a conclusion like it wasn't. There's something about it that we didn't.
It's no longer as cost prohibitive as it has been in the past.
Right. There was something about it. I can look
I don't.
If, you want.
If,
so,
if it's there and you don't know how to use it, can you do harm?
Well,
I hear they're pretty fail-safe.
The way, it's the same as this is how I explained yesterday in my training. As a fire extinguisher is there, and any person can come up to it and read the instructions, where you pull, point, squeeze, sweep. That's it. It's the same with the defibrillator. The instructions are laid out very clearly and have everything entailed with them. Josephine County is a participant in something called Pulse Point. I can't talk. Pulse Point. It's coming out in 2 weeks. It's already existing in Jackson County.
Mm-hmm.
It's tied into our 911 system. And essentially, if somebody calls 911 for a cardiac event, it's somebody, you would have the app on your phone. If you're within 400 feet of that cardiac event, your phone triggers that you're near an emergency, and you can go and give CPR before emergency services response. And Pulse Point is in AEDs are also a part of that. So if they are there, somebody trained knows where to grab one. So it's not a liability to have one because you don't know who's trained for it. And one thing, we could require that all county staff have first aid CPR. Already law enforcement's required to have it every year. And meaning all branches, but who's to say, you know, but in the training yesterday, they said it's foolproof if you follow the instructions.
Okay.
It won't cause a shock. You can't force it to do a shock. They're at the point now that the cost is lower. The foolproof in them is not as they were originally designed. So the safety net is in there. But now that we're participating in Pulse Point, where anybody would be able to say, I'm within 400 feet of a cardiac emergency, and here's a cardiac emergency device, that's going to be a part of our county in 2 weeks. So
we had a different piece on that.
Keeping citizens safe.
Do with liability, I think.
It did, yeah.
Well, the cost involved up front is that you buy the unit. They're about $800 to $900 a device. Every 2 years, you have to change the pads out, or if you use them, you have to change the pads out. And every 5 years, you have to change the battery. The pads themselves, the cost is $100 a year. The pads, I don't remember what they said for the battery, but it was one of those things that I'd be curious what the liabilities are, because every 4 years, the Red Cross updates their Samaritan laws and that as well. So I think it would be worth looking into, are those liabilities still there?
Okay.
And considering public health is promoting and other emergency services in the county 911 agency that were part of the Pulse Point, it would be worth knowing how that impacts. But literally in the last month, there was a rider on a transit bus that had a cardiac event and did not make it. And, you know, so it's kind of one of those things that he's saying that he paid his dues for being late.
No, I was seven, just not to interrupt you, I was 7 minutes late, so I put a 10 in and got three back.
Mm-hmm.
So I made change. We're square.
It was 206. You should have another dollar back to you.
No, that's fine. Leave it in there. I'm sure I'll use it.
Yeah. But anyhow, I would be curious if those liabilities remain.
Sure.
Because Good Samaritan laws do cover if you perform to your level of training. And if, like a fire extinguisher, you're not required to have training a fire extinguisher to work. Mm-hmm. You follow instructions. Same with the AED.
Good.
So, back to the discussion we started, the purpose for this general discussion today, although we can talk about anything we really need to, kind of getting a base level understanding of the mission. And so, those are just a quick tutorial on the subject. And the idea for me, and Paul, you can correct me if I'm wrong, is coordination is the idea that under the Federal Land Policy Management Act of 1976 and Article 43, the BLM is required to sit down at the time that they're deciding to do a management change in their management style or structure, policy of governing land within your jurisdiction. They need to come to you and talk about what it is that they're proposing to think about doing. And then you are supposed to try to, if the resolve of that is trying to work out inconsistencies between the two plans. So if our plan says that we want all of our trees to, none of our trees to be harvested in Josephine County, we don't do that here. And that's on our lands, that's on public lands, or BLM lands, the designated lands that they're talking about changing. They say, well, we really want to do sustained yield harvest management or what have you like that. And we come together and we try to work out the inconsistencies. Our plan says this, your plan says that.
And did I hear you say that it requires a change in the plan on either side to be before coordination can kick in?
No.
I thought you said that, you know, upon a change.
No, yeah, a change is what triggers the requirement for the federal agency to coordinate with us.
Right, that's what I was wondering. It's changed.
That's what
can it be changed in our policy that triggers that? It has to be a change in their policy.
Because they're the managers of the federal lands. It's really talking about federal land management.
And they just, the coordination says they really do need to get a hold of us if they're planning on.
When they're thinking about changing.
Thinking about changing.
When they're contemplating, I think is the word they use, when they're contemplating the change of a management style. So
is that happening?
It's never happened.
I mean,
the way they think they're doing it is when they are initiating a planning phase, they'll reach out to us as participants, as cooperators, and they'll reach out to KS Wild, they'll reach out to everybody that's got cooperating agency status. They can grant cooperating agency status to anybody they want. Nobody has coordination status except for governing bodies, publicly governing bodies. I Wally's checking into whether or not mining districts have that same coordination government-to-government status. There's no debate about counties. That's what FootNup was written for, is for counties to have that. And it's not equal footing. People think that we can hold their feet to the fire, that we're gonna make them do something. If they came to us and said, we want to gate every road in Josephine County that's a BLM road, and it isn't in our plan that says, no, your lands were designated since the turn of the century through various acts, but they're going to be multiple use, especially for the Forest Service. And our plan says that those lands will be maintained as multiple use. You need to maintain public access unrestricted. Then there's an inconsistency there that they're supposed to try to work out that element. And that's all they have to do, is try to work out that inconsistency with our plan. But I think it brings them to the table and gives us an opportunity to express why we think that that's important. There's this thing called 2477 roads that prior to 1976 were designated as public thoroughfares for the good of the community or something like that. Those cannot be abridged. They're not supposed to be closed down, decommissioned, gated off. They need to be open to the public in the same version that they were when they were on the books then. And so that's pretty sound. I mean, the result of them closing a road that we said no for that kind of a deal, we just take them to court. And we'd probably win. I think that's one of the strongest things is 2477 roads. They talk about that all the time.
I think I saw some of those on that map that Matt gave us the other day.
Yeah, the transportation.
There was a couple of 2477 roads, and I thought, I've heard that before.
Yeah, that's what those mean.
Yeah.
So, anyway, the implementation of a coordination plan is typically done through a coordination committee. It's not required. The agencies are still required to coordinate with us. They're not required to coordinate with a committee. The committee works for us on our behalf to evaluate proposed management changes at the federal level, because I'm not an expert in the off-road recreational thing or the horseback or the fly fishing people. But when they recommend a change, I'd want to go to that committee and say, hey, or that committee people population can say, hey, did you guys know that they're going to be doing blah, blah, blah? And no, please look into that for us and make us a recommendation about what we can do or how we need to amend our plan in order to accommodate that issue. But ideally, we have it fairly comprehensive. And so that the charge of the committee, I would see, is working on making our plan as robust as possible. It covers the style of how we want these federal lands to be managed and codifying that now. This stream being used for this purpose right now shall not be abridged by the...
When you sit down at the table, can the committee chairman or something be with you?
Oh, yeah. We can bring anybody to the table we want. In fact, we probably want those people.
Absolutely, yeah, because they're the ones that...
But ultimately, the coordination is only between the governing body and
right.
the agency.
Right.
They're just the most valuable resource, having those
right.
experts in the room who use, well, obviously, hopefully, they're users. So, Oahe County, I visited them in Idaho when I was spending too much money traveling around a couple years ago. Just kidding. I felt that it was important, and I spent 3 hours with their board. They had a general discussion like this, and I just happened to be there to meet with one of them. I said, why don't you come in and talk to us? We spent 3 hours talking about what coordination means to them and their community. They have a committee that is of 90 slots.
Whoa.
They had 60 people populating that committee. So say that their host core, the executive committee or whatever you want to call it, that they had 9 people on that. And then they had subcommittees of that 9 people who were, the off-roading, all these different issues. And they funneled into the executive committee, and then the board met with them on like a monthly basis going over federal land, because they're dealing with a dozen different issues. We don't have the staff to deal with a dozen different issues, but if we had that resource of a committee, we'd be doing a lot. And that stuff is happening out there. We're just not aware of it. These people are. Those fly fishing people or horse people are totally aware of that gate they just closed down, but we're not. And it would be really, really helpful. Mining issues.
I've heard there's a mix on the mining districts, whether or not our local mining districts lost. They basically let their infrastructure go at some point. And so even though they've all established themselves, they lost standing at some point, is what I was told. And I don't know that that's necessarily true, but it's why there is a group trying to help them kind of get standing again.
Are you saying that, like, for instance, if you have a mining claim, you're supposed to do a certain amount of improvements to it, and they didn't?
No, they didn't maintain their... they didn't maintain their boards. At some point, they dropped off, and then they were kind of recreated again.
Oh, the district.
The districts let their management go. And so I went to the Waldo Galise Mining District meeting last month, and they had some national folks there trying to get membership to try to get legislation changed at the national level to kind of give them standing again. But it was an interesting conversation, and basically that was the gist of it, is because at some point in the 60s or 70s or something like that, a lot of the mining districts kind of let leadership go, even though people have come back and reinstituted them. They, in the federal eyes, don't have standing like they used to.
It's too bad. It's really crazy the way the law operates. Like, rough and ready having standing in their thing, in their case. You know, they were, as a result of the federal lands, management stuff, they shut down, and then when they sell their stuff and don't really have intent to open back up again, then they lose standing in the lawsuit, even though they're still paying legal bills, doing all that stuff to keep the fight going.
You've lost interest, so we won.
Yeah, they won by people. The agency just
wore you down. Us.
They shut you down, and then when you shut down, they win because you shut down. So that seems really
unjust.
Yeah. So here is our latest version of our coordination plan. It was updated in 2015 with an addition of, I believe we included the ONC Act, which had missed the first version, and maybe FLIPMA.
There was an
addition of two things.
I think it was four.
Four things.
I think it was four, yeah. I remember, oh, thank you, okay. I'm able to navigate this pretty quick.
Harold and I, we did the first one back in 2012. There's a Fred Kelly grant. He's a guy who's gone around and talks about this stuff. I think I've read enough about this to know that what he says is true, but he says more than, he makes it into something that it isn't. That you can, and in my opinion, and I'm not a lawyer, but he sells it as though it's you can hold the agency's feet to the fire on this and get things done. You can get back into the woods and start cutting trees. No, I don't expect that to be a result. And maybe I'm not giving in. It's just that's not the way I read FLIPMA. It just says you have to work out the inconsistencies between the two plans.
Which makes me wonder what our plan says, so that if there are areas we want to make sure are included, we need to be doing that. For instance, multi-use.
Yeah, so the ONC lands is a good opportunity to talk about that. ONC is not multi-use, and I made this mistake when I first got here, I thought it was. ONC is dominant use. It's predominantly, those lands are set aside for sustained yield forest management on all of them. And it's a little complex. Forest Service is predominantly multi-use. It's mostly open to the public for all different kinds of purposes. But the single most important use, not the only use, but the most important use for ONC lands, 2.4 million acres, is sustained yield timber management. It's not for recreation. You know, you say, I want to go up there and say, no, we're doing timber sales. You're not putting up a park. You're not doing that other stuff. And so that's a different kind of a deal when people say, well, this is public land and the gate's closed. Yeah, we just did a reforestation and we don't want dirt bikes to turn it all up. And you don't have the right for public access out there the way you do on Forest Service land or other places. So that can kind of get people riled up a little bit.
Well, BLM's primary was recreation, but now it's not.
No, I think BLM probably has that charter on lands that aren't ONC. So not all BLM lands are ONC lands, but pretty much all ONC lands are BLM. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They're the charter agency. There's very few areas where the Forest Service has BLM. That's the largest, that purple. Up there, that's the largest piece of contiguous ONC land in the state. And and I don't really remember why that is. But a large swath of that going down right down the middle has been set aside for the wild and scenic designation for the mile.
What's the white in the middle of the green?
Private.
So people have private out in the middle of the wilderness?
Yeah, they're probably out in the county offices out there.
Yeah.
Yeah, Green Forest Service. Yeah.
There's a spot up on right smack in the middle of Harp Mountain. There's like 120 acres up there, and BLM has tried their darndest to get that back. They won't do it. There's a Order of the Antelope or something owns the thing, and they have a big rendezvous up there every year, and they spend 2 weeks cleaning everything up and making sure it's right, because it's private land, and they just cannot get that away from anybody. Kind of one of those deals.
There's a couple of those situations where a guy flies in his helicopter and stuff. He owns the mining and the rights and that, right in the middle of the county office's wilderness area. We own property in there. You can see there's a couple of spots.
We're the yellow, right?
No, that's the same. Yeah, we're that teal color.
Teal.
It's hard to see.
Oh, the teal color. Yeah.
But there's a couple of spots in there.
The yellow sea. Mm-hmm.
Stay.
So that piece of legislation, 2366, House Bill Transfer, they messed it up again. Did you hear about that?
It was on the legislative call this morning, and they said they got it fixed.
Oh, good.
Yeah,
Michelle said, how can you screw up? The whole premise of the bill, they left us out in their version. It was giving all of the lands greater than 10% of the state's holdings back to the counties in which they reside. It was their version that was screwed
greater
up.
Than 10%.
Greater than
10%. Lesser than.
So it's like,
complete opposite.
Okay. I'd actually be okay with that. If everybody else got their lands back but us, I really don't care. It's 7,000 acres. If everybody else got theirs back,
that's a triumph.
I would make them pay us.
Yeah, right.
A little bit of whatever. Our percentage off of their harvest, something like that. But so here's a copy of our coordination plan, and you guys can peruse that. It'll need attention. That would be the first thing that this committee would need to do, is go take a look at it and propose amendments, changes, updates. I don't think you need this. You just need this. This would be everything we did. We put travel management in here. There was a committee of maybe, I don't know, 20. It was a good sized committee. Jack Swift was on it. A former BLM guy, Joel King, was the chair, I think. And he led the group through this. It was environmental interests, timber interests, mining interests, recreators, horse people, everybody.
And where did that go? Did it go nowhere?
We send it annually to...
Oh, yeah. So that committee effort resulted in this plan.
Yes.
Yeah, that's what he's describing.
We adopted it in 12, amended it in 15, and the previous board who had amended it, they didn't want to establish a committee. So if the committee is really where the rubber meets the road, we can send out those letters. So that's the next step. And Wally and I are working on it. I apologize. We don't really have anything proposed for you yet, but we're going to look into adopting a. Proposing a plan of like a Baker, Oahu County, and their structure, and then give them this and say, look at it, let's see what needs to be updated so we're not missing anything, and send out another set of letters to say, we've got a committee that would love to sit down and talk with you about these three specific issues.
Yeah,
and start there.
Does that allow us to cut more timber or anything, or is that
our plan says we want to cut timber?
Okay.
All the 346,000 acres of BLM ONC in Josephine County need to be operated under sustained yield ONC Act. We adopted
the
ONC language in here.
That's your
any deviation from that, they should be coordinating.
Okay.
When we started into the resource management plan being developed, that just was recently adopted by the BLM 5 years ago, Josephine and Jackson County elected not to sign up as cooperating agencies, so that's the status for anybody can do. We said, no, you didn't coordinate with us. You never sat down and said, this is what we're planning on doing, rewriting the Northwest Forest Plan. So we're not going to cooperate with you. You need to coordinate with us on all counties. So Jackson and Josephine County elected not to do that. which provided us the opportunity to get out of, to sue as part of the industry's
yes.
cases, and not really disrupt the ONC Association's lawsuits, because we were never formally listed, because we were never, that they listed all the cooperating agents and counties, and there were three that were not. Now, Benton was cooperating.
They didn't want to be a part of the suit.
Yeah.
It was. So, they, yeah.
So Ben's out, but Jackson and Josephine County weren't listed, and so
we got
we
to file in the Swanson 3.
Just, so you never know what those ideas 5 years ago. They resulted in a really good opportunity for us, I think. So.
Yes. It was good strategically.
Yeah.
It worked out really well that we were that we held firm on this coordination.
Yeah. So we'll get you something real soon, as soon as we can, as a proposed committee structure. And we'll go out and advertise.
So okay.
That's the plan. Do you have any questions?
No. Just wait and get those copies so we can read them.
Yeah.
Yep. Please.
We will do that.
I'm not sure a 90-person committee is durable.
They've got issues over there. They're a really heavily natural resource. They've got a lot of mining and stuff. We do too, but
yeah.
We're not in Idaho. You can mine over there. You can't really mine much in the state.
But I mean, as far as the makeup of the committee and looking at what subcommittees would be needed, I think that's important. And maybe we do end up with that we have these subcommittees, and each of those subcommittees have a chair that goes to the committee. So it's not a 90-person committee.
Right.
It's one from each of the subcommittees that then kind of go from there, a chair, vice chair kind of model, maybe.
Right. We'll figure out the best version that works out of those three or four that I mentioned and kind of bring it back for a structure we suggest. Definitely.
Like, I would nominate Dennis Dixon, our mining advisory board chair, you know,
definitely
throw him under the bus.
Definitely not him. Anybody with
this thing on?
Pastor Dixon.
Since he's in the room, I can tease him. Yeah. Alrighty. Well, that was my only concern with that. So the conversation we were filling with before we went to coordination was the visioning.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to see that really. I'm one of those people that if we talk about something, I want to actually see the action follow through with it. I don't like to just see things talked about and never happen.
Mm-hmm.
So what would the steps be for that? I mean, as far as you've asked certain departments to kind of have a visioning plan, but to me there's kind of a short-term, long-term strategy involved there, and part of that needs to be us establishing what is our view for the long-term, short-term as well. You know, we talked about courthouse.
Is overdue.
Mm-hmm. But if they don't know our vision for where they're going, of course, I could understand the frustration of a department head who gets new elected and then that change.
My vision for the fair.
I love the idea of a convention center, a total community process. You know, even the arena getting replaced with something like you have at the expo, where you have a multi-use, where you can have indoor concerts or big fairs and stuff like that. I love the idea. But the visioning, the planning, the payments, the getting it all going, you know, and all that kind of stuff. So,
Mrs. Ford said to make sure you take a look at Klamath Arena.
Oh, really?
Klamath Falls Arena. She said it's unbelievable.
Nice. She invited us to come over on the 25th because her grandson's getting his rodeo buckle.
Nice.
So I know at one point there was discussion and interest in doing a manager's retreat. And that wound up kind of not coming to fruition. I don't remember why, but that's an idea that was floated in the past.
Yeah.
Have they even had a manager's monthly meeting yet?
Oh.
They did earlier this week.
Hmm.
I went to that one really briefly. It wasn't really, I didn't feel like it was well attended this month. But you guys need to get in the rotation on that. And so basically, have you ever spent week? I don't know how fruitful it is for me. It hasn't been. So I've been probably 5-10 minutes there talking about kind of the direction that the board is moving in and what we see coming down, you know, the pike of the budget process getting established and started. answer any questions. There are rarely any, but I think they'll probably want to hear more from you guys because they don't know you as well. So that there could be a lot that you guys could provide at that meeting and maybe feedback from them. I think it's helpful for the managers. I know it is. It's just, it's not everything I would like. If I'm running a company, I want to hear from the managers about the issues that they're having that are solvable by the CEO. And I have never gotten that. And not that it's their fault. I'm not asking it, or it's not being conveyed in the right way. And so if you guys have ideas of the reoccurring issues that each of these departments have, maybe it's an individual conversation. I don't know, but I know they're having them. Nothing's perfect. And when I was in D.C., we'd have 28 managers from all different departments in a manager's meeting once a month, and with the, not with the CEO, but it was either, you know, like the vice president or something, talking about what can we do different to improve things. And there was real discussion. I mean, it would go on for hours.
I don't see those conversations happening. I see more people projecting what we've always done versus what we could do or what we could be. And one of the things that I learned from being a division manager with the county was that my department head was evaluated purely by his relationship with the commissioner. The commissioners are charged in our charter to reevaluate all department heads when we get elected. How do we do that if our only relationship is with that department head? And personally, our evaluation process, I think, could be improved on. I know it's not your favorite thing.
No.
But
well, it would be better if it were better.
Yeah. But I can guarantee that if we're not soliciting from staff, if we're not soliciting from division managers or other levels, why are we giving evaluations based on or interaction with one person when we are only getting presented their side? I can tell you that, you know, our previous liaison told me he loved that he was getting weekly reports from the department head. So as far as he was concerned, he was doing great. None of those weekly reports were coming to staff, and staff was completely separated from the department head. So you would have got a completely different view of how that department head was, you know, doing things if he'd come to staff. That was something I got out of being at Public Health today. I have employees coming up to me to defend management or to offer suggestions for improvement from management. I'm hearing both sides of that, but part of that is them having the trust to feel that they can come to us and have that conversation. And in order for us to truly evaluate, I think we can improve upon.
Well, is that an appropriate thing to be doing? I'm a big proponent, I guess, for better or for worse, and for the Marine guys sitting here, for chain of command. If you have an issue, you need to go to HR, I think.
HR is not technically in the chain of command. The chain of command is your direct supervisor, their supervisor, their supervisor. HR is assigned.
That's why you go to HR. You know, HR says, no, that's not an issue, or yeah, you need to take that to your liaison. I don't know. I don't know what the system is. This is a weird place to be, you know.
Well, I had a staff member today tell me, I feel that these managers are getting hung out to dry and not getting support. And I took it to HR and they said, not something positive. And so this person tried going to HR and now was to me. And they wanted to make sure that I saw a different perspective when that they thought was not being offered. But I do know that from my standpoint, in talking with previous liaison, was they didn't care what the staff's perspective was. They had a good relationship with the department head, and that was enough to evaluate on. And I remember feeling at the time, that's not giving a full picture. And if you look at evaluations, there's stuff called 360s, where you go above a level, you go below a level, you go peers, and you get feedback from multiple levels. Now, you weight them how you want to, and you know people, but there are different evaluation forms out there for getting a bigger perspective. But how do we as commissioners apply to the charter that says we will evaluate all department heads when we're elected? I mean, I have two up there right now. I'm not signing on purpose for various reasons. But how have we evaluated our department heads?
Well, and it hasn't always been. We've never had a conversation about, I know that there was a former commissioner who would give everybody, you know, exceeding expectations. And I thought that was a poor reflection on that person. Nobody exceeds my expectations all the time.
Nope.
Nobody should.
And it's against what HR tells managers how to evaluate. So if we get a department head that has exceeds expectations or outstanding on everything, that should be tossed. because it goes in direct violation of what HR is telling managers how to evaluate their own staff.
They really don't mean anything, these evaluations. No, I don't want to.
But they are part of, if we get sued for false termination, they're going to look at these evaluations. And if they have issues not getting addressed, that's on us. And if we set the standard that we're doing that as well, why would any of our staff take anything seriously if we're not? Personally, I don't think our current evaluation system actually addresses employees at all.
I think there's a difference between exempt employees who can be dealt with without cause. There's a lot more discretion than with union employees. So a manager evaluating a union employee needs to do a very thorough job, and that's different. Mm-hmm. For a manager, if they're not doing a good job, I don't know that I need the structure of an evaluation.
And
you've got 2 weeks to figure this out.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to figure it out.
I hear you, but I attended a class with CIS when I was at the management school at DPSST for my certification, and CIS presented to us managers. And at-will employees still have employment protection under Oregon law. So even though we can just let go, we still need to make sure our documentation's in order.
Yeah.
But when we have HR teaching all our division managers and directors that you're aiming for expectation, and if they need improvement, you document it. If they exceed in an area, you document it, but you're aiming for expectation. And then if our department heads are all exceeding or outstanding, how is that the same as what we're training our staff to be expecting?
Well, it's really hard to have a consistent expectation. So you guys are 7 and 8 that I served with. When you can imagine these managers who've had 4 different liaisons,
mm-hmm.
you know, in 4 years, 5 years.
Other than just keeping a record of it, it probably means nothing.
Yeah.
Other than having documentation, if you ever need to fire the guy,
mm-hmm.
it really means nothing.
But our county
because
has lost those lawsuits.
Nobody's going to sit back there and go, you know what? I think I'm going to work really harder because of this and that thing. And I guess if you wanted to take that, you could spend a lot of time on that.
Mm-hmm.
But I look at an overall guy. You know, I had employees that they didn't do everything that I wanted to. But at the end of the day, I made money and I didn't lose any business. And that's what I gauged them on. Are they doing the job for the company that I expect them to do? They're not going to do it the way I want to do. But you know, the way I would do it maybe, because that's just the way it is. There's more than one way to put in a duct system.
There's a 100 different examples of things where a county manager, that's the person who should be doing evaluations over the managers, the staff. They're a professional who can do and spend time doing the 360 look at your, like you're talking about. I don't have the time to go ask somebody in public works about, I've heard stuff, but how valuable is that to me relative to the way I feel? You know, Rob's presenting, he's leaning into this evaluation, this review and stuff. He's well respected by his peers in the state. He's mm-hmm. up to speed on legislation. You know, I don't know, you know. Road system seems to be in pretty good. He needs to work on these things and he's doing that. Could he do better? Sure. It's just tough. What about a county manager? Have you guys ever? I think it's a non-starter in our community, but
I think there's efficiencies that come with it. For instance, like what you said, you actually have an administrator making decisions the day-to-day. I also think that having worked in the system with the city council, you lose a lot of say. You set the policy, and that manager is the one that carries it out, and essentially the commissioners, in that case, the city councilors, they have no authority.
Is it because they don't know how to exercise authority? Because that's the conversations that I've had with councilors for 7 years. Is that you don't know what the kind of authority you have. But you have it as a group, and it's bigger over there. Mm-hmm. You don't have any authority here. You have two, you know. Then you can do instructions to staff and say, you need this done, I want to find this out. Maybe that's the challenge of the council. Is like, how do they operate as a political body that you know, that you and three other people that are tracking with you, and you say, I want these financial reports.
The problem that I had over next door is that if we found something wrong in staff, there was nothing we could do about it, and they knew it.
We'll hear that from other commissioners as well at County College when they have a county administrator. They have some of them saying, you do not talk to my staff. You go through me.
Yep. And I can give you examples of it, but I don't need to. Absolutely, you know, if I had an employee that lied to me, they're gone.
Yep.
They're gone. You know, just throw your keys on the desk and I'll send your stuff home in a box. But you know what, over there, it's over and over and over and over again. And as a governing body, you really even can't go to the manager and say, that guy lied to me right to my face, and you do something about it.
Yeah.
Nope. I have no authority to do that, because guess what? You lose your job with that manager in between. I'm not in favor of a county manager just because of the experiences we've had across the pond.
Yeah.
That's it. And you ask about authority. They are purposely dumbed down. This new group that's in there is four of them. One of the counselors on the TV, on the radio talk show the other day, he said that the three counselors that worked there, they were asked about the irrigation district, said, well, the three counselors that went and made that negotiation had no authority to do that,
yeah.
Which was wrong. And he said, well, you know, I understand that the council voted to let them go. And he said, and this person said, there are only six people on the council, so they didn't have the authority to do it. As if it wasn't a full eight-man team,
yeah.
Somebody over there has told him that, you know, if there's only six, that they have no authority until they're a full body. And I'm going to go back to that person and say, well, I guess you better get that water plant off the docket right now.
Yeah, right.
Because it was the same six people that approved building a new water plant. It's done. You start
five's
all over
a quorum,
again.
Period. Over there, but that's amazing. But they, yeah, but it is, and that's what you're continuing to see is your authority to actually get some things done.
Yeah.
So we've tried different versions here at the county before me, but I inherited a CFO, Rosemary, who I thought she wasn't a county manager, but she definitely had the authority, you know, the board gave it to her on an individual basis to do things. So that might be a limited.
Well, they had the hybrid with the COO and the CFO at the same time.
You're the COO, and I don't mean that.
But I think
they countered each other, and it took away the power from both.
And if you do, that, you're not consistent. Right now, they know that you and me, we're there. That's
yeah.
it. But if you say, okay, well, I'm gonna give this particular project to this person over here and give him full authority on it. Then the next time they go, well, I want to talk to you about it. I say, no, and there's, you know, you have to have consistency in who's actually running the tiller. And if you don't, by spreading it around, I don't know what you would gain with a county manager. Would it be easier workload on all three of us? I don't think so. I think it's going to get even harder.
There is a bill.
Serve with the next person who sits here and try that out. See, maybe it'll be fine for your guys' full term, but I know the turmoil that I've had, this county would have been better served by the right county manager to...
And that's the tough one. It's tough to get the right county manager.
I mean, it's
that's a roll of the
dice. It hasn't been easy on me having that many people, and that's not my job, but it has been. It's really the county manager's job to help facilitate the transitions in these boards. It's not his job, but it's been partially his job for only two sets. But it could have been a lot worse. You know. I'm trying to think about long term, about when I'm not here anymore, when you guys are not here anymore, and we have the same, you recycle the same players from the last 10 years.
Well, a county manager, if you could get one that you're going to keep hired for 10 to 12 years, you'll get rid of that every 2 years having to break somebody in.
Yes.
I grant you that. But if you get a bad one, then that's tough to get rid of. And now,
Are they? I mean, I feel like...
It wasn't easy doing a switch with our city manager.
Nope. We really had to. I went in with papers, and I said, here, Laurel, here's your copy, and I have two copies right here. She's, where are those going? I said, one's for my file, and the other's going down to HR. And that scared her half to death. I was going to put something in her file. That really, that shook her up.
Matter of fact, they said you can't.
I don't want to be, you know, but I've never had a problem getting rid of a manager.
But that's because you're the administrator.
No, I'm just the commissioner in a policy sense. The first one we wrote out of the budget, and the other ones we just...
Let me put it...
It's the contract, right? Isn't the contract...
Do you think that a contract...
I've never seen a contract with what we have with our staff. I remember that the division heads or department heads, whatever we call them now, would sign an annual contract to keep employment. I don't know if we still do that. Over there, it was a contract that was an issue. And in their contract ahead of time, you have how much notice you have to give for replacement, how much pay you have to give, you know, based on how long they've worked there, you get more pay when you leave, different compensation and stuff like that. I mean, I have people challenge me on how much I make right now, and what's that turn into if you have a county manager as far as pay and all that other kind of stuff. I should give you guys a heads up. I noticed on the governance email, there is a bill before the legislature requiring all counties to have 5 commissioners. I thought our home rule would override it.
Yes.
Yeah,
it would. So. And who proposed that? Any insight on that point?
That's going to be a non-starter, I would guess.
Are they still doing committee referrals? They may not even really know.
That's exactly right. Yeah, if it was brought
as
a committee bill, then
legislation to say that you can't have committee bills anymore, but that's not.
No, no.
That's going nowhere. It's a good thought, but you know, people like the anonymity of the committee turning it out.
Yeah. Well, it is a way to shed baggage on legislative proposals. If you have somebody in there that's unpopular on one level but doesn't have a half bad idea, you know. Or let me put it this way, if you have somebody from the minority party who wants to get something done and they get along with the committee chair, I mean, that was how I got a lot of stuff.
True.
Passed, honestly. I mean, I felt like I was fairly effective, and most of my stuff actually went through as committee bills, judiciary committee bills.
Mm-hmm. We can talk later on, like, a long-term structure, but I think the long-term visioning thing, an idea, and having that as a charge for every department or program is a good idea, that now is the time to do that. Part of me feels like there's all these boats, you know, I talked about, there's 100 different of these issues. We start all those. I don't have to finish them, but I just want to kind of put them out on the pond and get them moving in that direction. And you really need to have a course chart when you do that. So after you guys leave, you know, somebody else is picking up the baton, and you're seeing the end of some of these projects that take forever. They don't happen in a term.
You mentioned kind of, and one of the things I think I would like to see if the possibility of implementing is somewhat of a program, a management tracking. In a project, you would have a Gantt chart.
Yeah.
Where you would say, okay, here's the project, what's all the steps of the project, here's the timeline, and you'd see all the timelines play out. We as a county, do we have a Gantt chart for all the projects we're working on, division by division, department by department? As new leadership comes in, how do you know what's already in play, what's going, until it just happens to pop on our agenda?
Where is it? Where
and
is
so
it
if we actually had a project tracking software, potentially at any time we can look at any department and see what's being worked on, what's the time frame goals, what's it entail, where's the funding stream, where are they meeting needs? I mean, the potential.
When he's making a presentation to the board on the 6th at 2:00, she's just finding out about this, on the POIO program or an alternative to be able to codify the things that we are working on. So we're going to have the goals put into those, every program, break it down when we're in this meeting and we say, Simon, go write a letter on blah, blah, blah. It goes on my list of things to do in a time frame. So kind of doing exactly what you're talking about. And so you're right. After I leave, there's all these things that were in the queue. Wally leaves. He knows what his projects are. Codification or whatever else is next. The charter review committee.
It's kind of
for the county forest thing.
Yeah.
All that stuff.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's just it. We talked about the forest trust, but
he probably has it better than anybody else about all the projects that
he's
working on.
He'll try to
really comprehensive list.
But you know, again, how does this goes back to the COOP plan. What's our coordination of operation, continuation of operations? If one person was not there, can the county continue to function in a healthy way? Can anybody step into that role and know exactly where everything is by looking at it?
Pat's the only one that can't die.
Or win the lottery or whatever.
Yeah.
Right? I'm just kidding. Everybody else is. Pat over in our office, I had a frank conversation with Wally back in the day when he got elected. I said, I don't care what. I mean, they're all wonderful people over there. I hope they stay. But, you know, it's your office, your lord of the manor, king of the castle. You can do whatever you want. But Pat is going to stay.
Yes, that's right. Yes.
Whether she works for you or she works for me, she's not going to. She does have this knowledge. It's almost like Rocky McVeigh with ONC. It's, you know, they were there when the ONC Act was written, practically. Not in a negative sense. It's just they really, they've eaten, slept, and breathed this county for so long. They'll remember stuff. It's just, it's inspiring, but I don't know. It's invaluable, really. We have a fairly young managerial team. Every single one of them, minus two, Lisa, and I keep saying minus Rob. I forget about Lisa. I didn't hire her, but everybody else has come on board in a management position since I got elected. So when I took office, a bunch of them have been here, like Doreen for 20 years, and you know, a bunch of people have been here for a long time. So it's got its positives and its negatives. We've shed a lot of that baggage. Have a fresh perspective on things. How's the issue with the water out at Indian Mary? That's an executive session, but is there any result?
We are actually, when the stark reality that we were about to file a lawsuit finally occurred, you know, the guy finally sunk in, he hired a lawyer, for better or worse, Mark Lansing, and Lansing contacted me immediately with offers for settlement. And they're not bad offers. Actually, as a going-in position, they're not all that bad. I'll have to put it on a session. But you know before Sarah does. I had some other bad news to break to Sarah, and so I'm trying to drip it out to her rather than just... But anyway, I have not yet filed. That's kind of how it's planned, yeah. And so, but actually at some point, either... After this meeting or tomorrow, I'm going to call Lansing and just get a little bit of clarification on what he's offering. But I think what we're hoping for ultimately at the end of this is a functional water system at the park.
We are, but I don't know that those people are the people we're going to have to...
And he's clear on that point.
Yeah,
and
we're
so
to a different start.
Where I went in, I said, okay, well, if your guy is actually going to enter a good faith negotiation, then he needs to understand from the get-go that this is the first slow sand filtration system he's ever attempted. And so... If we do stick with this, and that's a big, huge hypothetical if, he would need to subcontract that out, or better yet, he would need to start from scratch, and install a system that actually is appropriate for this park and that works.
I think Sarah's pretty resolved on sand infiltration.
Have you thought about taking him to the construction contractor board?
Actually, you thought about that, and so we did follow up on that, and he has a $20,000 bond. with the construction contractors board, and he has a $1 million insurance policy. But what we've kind of learned so far is that the CCB will only step in if we don't file a court case.
Another thing that CCB always wants you to do is allow him the opportunity to fix it.
Yes.
You have to do that one time. You have to say, you know, this, because I've been down that road a couple times, and they ask, they just point blank ask the lady, do you want money or do you want this thing fixed? Mm-hmm. And she said, well, I want it fixed. They said, then you have to offer to Mr. Dion the opportunity to fix this. And if you don't, I think if she said, no, I just want the money, she lost probably right there on the spot.
Lansing, probably incorrectly, but nevertheless, is already arguing that point. He says he's going to argue that to the judge. Mitigation. And so, which we did, of course. I mean, there's going to be some facts that get batted around, but
well, I think the duration of time that we've been, you know, going on, and running this thing around should be an indication that we give.
I think I'm putting him on some kind of a time frame because summer's coming.
we did last year. I mean, we told him fix the thing by November 1st of last year, or we're going to pursue litigation. And he never even showed up to the park. I mean, he sent us a lengthy manifesto with a bunch of excuses.
Hopefully this year, with the rainfall we've had, we're not experiencing problems. We have a well out there that can service the whole thing. Or the alternative that we've been doing for years is we truck water in on a regular basis and stuff. So we won't be up a creek without a paddle, but it's not the long-term, you know, sandbag. Right. This is a generator that you put on reserve in case you ever need, you know, you don't have power. It's just for water, and hopefully we don't need it this next year, but there will be a time when the power is going to fail and the water is going to go out, and you're going to need it at our most popular park. So really, you know, she's talking about $300,000 worth of revenue out there. You need a system that lasts for 10, 20 years, at least, and it takes low maintenance, not a whole lot of stuff, and we didn't do it right. So, I mean, we may have allowed the wrong contractor to do it. So, I think we should do it. Let's sort of figure it out.
Did anybody check with anybody when he had his proposal? Did anybody call anybody and say request and have references?
Apparently, he's really good. He is really good. He's just not good at this.
I think that sums it up. Yeah,
he is.
Yeah,
he can put in stuff every day of the week. Just not a sand filtration system like this. He's never done before. You know, reading the directions while you're taking it out of the box and trying to put it together is not how this happens. So, anyway.
Oh, I had so many puns I could go with.
What's that?
Nothing.
Oh.
It's going to be a brat. I know I never do that.
Well,
about reading directions and, you know, all that kind of stuff.
So you're out tomorrow. we didn't get to go through next week's schedule like I'd like to do on a weekly basis. But is there anything that we need to go over for next week? It seems pretty routine, if we have a routine.
Monday, you and I are both gone.
Yep.
Tuesday's normal schedule.
And I would like to sit down.
Tuesday's going to change, too, because Bonnie's going to be gone Tuesday at noon or something, so we're going to change that legal update to Wednesday.
Okay. I wonder where I'm going.
And I would like to.
Yes. Thank you. Okay.
So we'll do legal update at 2, and then Jenny's going to do her thing at 3 or something, the EOP or fire standards.
Did you say Wednesday?
Wednesday.
That's been shifted to. Okay. Thank you. Okay.
And I need some of your time today to talk dog law.
Sure. Yes, you do. Yes, you do. The case has still not come in from Mercy yet, but. We're expecting that. Well, you're not going to be here tomorrow, right? That's fine. You won't have the evidence yet, but we do need to go over what the procedure, you know.
I need to know what to expect.
Yes, what to expect. Yes.
Are you going to be there for that?
Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah.
So the potential of challenging evidence to make sure it's to legal standard, that if it's appealed to circuit court, that we can meet that standard?
Yeah, it doesn't apply.
It's not appealable to circuit court?
It is appealable to circuit court.
But it's not that level.
Correct. Yeah, it's very
highly at the discretion of the board.
Where's the dog now? Is it incarcerated?
To my knowledge. Yeah, that's why you're hearing the case. And I guess I haven't seen the file. I am told, rightly or wrongly, that the dog didn't actually kill an animal. That didn't kill livestock. So there's at least that level of kind of consideration going into this. Usually there's these ones that kill. Yeah.
Don't have a hearing before the hearing. Yeah.
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 You don't want to go into it with a preconceived idea unless it's mine. And I'm just kidding.
Yes. Yes.
I want to weigh in on what you just said, and I don't want to do that.
Yeah, right. You know what I mean? Right, right, right. Okay, we'll leave that alone then. Okay. Yep, yep.
So next week, we've got a pretty busy schedule. I'm out on Thursday and Friday for the ONC, so it is a busy week.
Tuesday, Wednesday.
Tuesday, Wednesday. We're going to get it all done. Where are we moving the admin? Do you guys have a quorum on Thursday to do the admin? You guys can handle it.
Yeah, has to leave early, so we'll just do it real quick.
Okay. Yeah, that's fine. Okay. Well, if there's nothing else, anything else for the good of the order? I like these general discussions. I think they need to. I'm okay with not having an agenda. We just kind of talk about stuff. That's okay.
I had lunch with Dave Thomason.
Yeah.
Very much, very, very much on board with the levy.
Great.
Wow.
Yeah. He says, you know, he says that you the one thing that really, really, really turned is that we three are backing this levy and backing our sheriff. He says, I says, how can we ask you to do that one if we don't back him ourselves? He says, very good point. He was very excited about that.
Excellent.
So he's, you know, we had a real good talk. We talked about, in fact, I even brought it up. I said, you know, brought up at the breakfast table one time at about a regional sales tax. And I figured, boy, he's going to let me have it right there. And he says, meaning what? And I says, Coos, Curry, Jackson, Josephine, Klamath, Douglas. And I said, 2%, just model it after Grants Pass's tax. I says, and just, but it would go to the counties. We're all strapped, except maybe Jackson, but they need to be in on it.
Mm-hmm.
And I explained it to him, and he goes, you know, you're right. And I says, because, you know, tourism is a bit, and we keep getting told that tourism is taking the place of the timber industry and everything. Well, if it is, you're not going to collect any from tourism. A property tax doesn't mean anything. But if you're going to, the only way you're going to attach tourism is on a sales tax. And that just needs to be a small one.
The only question I'd have about that, I lived in Washington for college.
Mm-hmm.
You go to the grocery store, you still pay taxes on the grocery store.
Well, it depends on how you fashion it. We're not gonna get into the details. I'm just throwing up a balloon in front of Dave Thomason, who is absolutely dead set against it and financed the no side of it.
Yep.
And he was responsive to it. He goes receptive to it. He's like, well, that's something you guys should really look into. He says, you know, that may be. I said, we're looking for answers. That's all we're looking for. I just
responding to you said model after Grants Pass.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say maybe model after somewhere that has a successful sales tax program.
Rather than Grants Pass. Correct. I mean, I was going from the 2%.
Yeah.
2% and first $1,000.
Sorry.
It's $350 or $350?
$300, $350. $350 words. I think, but I can look that up again. But it was
we're looking at probably taking the concept of the fact sheet and providing that. One of the big things I think is the removing the jail contract and clarifying for the city voters that, you know, if it's $12 for the average person, but you're removing $4 basically a month from their water bill. It's really only $8, you know, the impact to the average resident in Grants Pass. And you still get the same kind of service, if not better, obviously. So you get everybody collected. Whatever those arguments that we need to make sure that we can articulate in 350 words.
Another one that Dave was jazzed about was the fact that first off, he said, well, I heard it's 83 cents. And I said, and we stuck another dime on there for juvenile. And he liked that. He really liked the juvenile aspect of it.
Yeah.
And then I said, plus we're going to drop 13 cents off when we pay off the bond. And he goes, whoa. So that brings it right down to 80 cents. I said, yeah, it does. Because we're under a dollar. And we've been told over and over again by a lot of people, you get under a dollar, you swing that needle.
Well, what often sat at the cops group and said, if you're not down around 89 cents, I can't support this. We're down at 80 cents.
Yeah.
That's the impact on your taxes next year, not this year, the next year. So I hope Ward is a gettable get, in my opinion. Mr. Ockenden can see the benefit, I think, of this. As an owner of property that wants to eventually sell 35 acre lots up in the North Valley to people who, they want to feel safe in that area. They want to be able to call 911, just like they want to be able to turn the water on. Have it in the lights. You know, it should be. That's the expectations of people moving into this area, that they're going to be able to draw on that service the same way as a utility. And if one doesn't work, nobody's going to move out to his place if they can't get power. You know, that's just the truth. And I think he can. I think that's the message to Ward. You're sitting on it. He's getting assessed as it's an R5 property, 157 acres. 30 lots, but he doesn't have any revenue coming in to pay on a $2 million piece of property. So he's incentivized just to get that moving. I think that's the way to get more, is figure out a way to bring it back to the pocketbook and just say, we're going to get some bang for the buck, you're going to get some response. Well, I'm going to let you guys go.
I appreciate that. I got a medical at 3:30.
All right.
Did you have some for Esther?
He's got a question for me.
I do. All you got?
Yeah.
Come on up.
I'm the chairman of my advisory committee that serves you.
Well, actually, for the record, you are, because otherwise we wouldn't make an accommodation.
I know.
An unscheduled constituent. But you are our mining advisory chair.
So here's a picture of the files down in the surveys office of the original mine claims. If you go in a clerk's office, there's about 1,500 claims that's in the courthouse where we're sitting here. There's a picture upstairs in the court of original mining. Downtown, there's the scales at the bank where the millions of dollars of the local gold was scaled. And here's the premise that I want to bring out to your attention. The Oregon State Legislature, for the last 5 or 6 or 7 years, by action of Senator Atkinson and Senator Bates, which are trout fishermen, have determined to outlaw gold mining by prohibiting using mechanical means for mining. Okay? They just want to outlaw anything that has an engine on it. So basically pans and a shovel. Well, okay. Put that on the side. According to what I understand about government taking away property at the state level, if they want the county to stand by and watch the state take away people's property, and all these mining claims is genuine property, and if you take away their mining operations, it's just like telling farmers you can't have a tractor, or a logger you can't have a yarder, or a chainsaw, or a trucker a truck. So they're basically at the legislative level trying to take away at least 1,500 Josephine County citizens' property rights. And I think there's probably some law in the book out here in America where the county could seriously bark back at the state and say, look, we got equal use in the rivers. There's no laws that's already on the books that need to be added. There needs to be no moratoriums, no takeaways. There's no proven science that gold mining bothers fish, period. We've submitted from our mine advisory committee document after document after document after document from certified scientific research, even from the state's own Department of Mineral Research that has certified by state scientists that gold mining as we do now has no effect on the salmon. But the liberals up there have decided to take away all the rights of all the counties in the whole state, and we're proving to them and have sent copies to everyone, it has a huge economic impact across the whole state. So I don't know what to tell you other than what they're doing up there is illegal, immoral, and ethical. They're not listening to me or Herman or anybody. And we've testified and testified and testified and sent stuff for years. And every mining organization has relentlessly and insidiously appealed to Salem to cut it out, and they're ignoring us, and they're determined to destroy the mining industry. And all I'm saying is it's bogus. The other side of my report, the mining districts have been asking me, as the chairman of my advisory committee, to have an economic summit again like we did the last couple of years, and they want to invite the new Department of Interior people to come to our region and take a look around, and there's other groups talking about that. So the mineral wealth is still out here, and the tourism potential is huge, and the state's absolutely determined to take that away from the entire state. Baker County, Jackson, Josephine, Douglas County, Cusco, everyone that has mining, there's a handful of people out there that wants to just flat take it away. And I don't know what else to say. I mean, they're ignoring all of us. They didn't coordinate with any of us. They don't talk to any of us. They're just legislating law that's taken away real genuine land use. So that's my report.
Has AOC taken a stance on Senate Bill 3?
Not officially. No, there was a proposal from the Energy, Environment, and Land Use Committee to oppose Senate Bill 3, but it was delineated wrong at the committee meeting as to support, and the staffer changed that. And without it being proposed correctly, it didn't get put in the queue. I don't know that anybody cares what AOC says on this position. They don't care what Phil Gammie says, and that's their state agency on the
issue. They don't care what anybody says.
I hear you. And we're going to get that fixed this next month, but the staffer isn't a real big probably on one side or the other of that issue. So
maybe we need to express that we'd like them to be.
Yeah, we can
at least explain themselves.
I think the group is going to be
a little accountability be
on the right side of it.
Yeah.
But they just may not work on it very hard.
Okay.
So anyway, I just wanted to also, you know, I've sat in meetings and watched this board of commissioners for a while, and I think you guys are doing an exceptionally good job with all of what you're dealing with, and, you know, working with the Republicans and all that. I'm listening to all the people like you're talking about, Dave Thomas and different people. They're starting to look at different options, so I think there's a real positive momentum. And there's still a lot of wonks out here. No matter what you do, they're going to bark at you and throw rocks and protest.
So, Mr. Dixon, I think, you know, a lot of people have been fighting this forest issue, and the only thing that seems to resonate with anybody, and it's not rocket science, is a lawsuit. So if there's a nexus of the takings element that you're talking about.
That's what I'm talking about. It's a takings.
Yeah.
And we need to, I'm happy to lean into that from a legal standpoint. Which you illustrated being one of the most impacted.
I say this authoritatively? The mining is so regulated. I mean, 100%. We don't mine when the salmon are spawning. There is nothing that the miners are doing to hurt the fish. You know, it's all about fish. It's okay. If we were killing fish, you'd have something to say. But the miners are not the problem. They're not hurting the fish at all. The miners are fishermen and sportsmen. I wouldn't want to hurt a salmon. Fishermen kill fish, but miners don't. So that's an absolute non-starter. But what about designated parts of the river? So you guys can mine here, and you guys fish over there. But they just want to take all the mining away in the whole state.
If there's fish anywhere on the river, it's gone.
It's the trout fishermen and the recreational against everyone else that wants to use the river.
What basis do they make the statement that mining kills fish? Do they have pictures of a guy doing mining and downstream the banks have got a half a dozen fish on? There is no, I see no proof.
There's never been a dead fish from mining that they've ever proven.
Well, I can prove the problem even further beyond that. The big issue, they say, is they muddy the water. Did you notice the river runs muddy down here for 6 months out of the year?
Well,
they don't seem to kill it. They're going to.
People say, well, you know, got to keep all that pollution out of the river.
I got to get to the point.
They don't understand that fish don't like real clean water. That's what they feed on, is what's in the water.
Well, the old reports that the Gogamini made in the 30s is that the muddy water actually helped the fish because the predators couldn't get them.
So one other thing on that note, I listened to the Bill Meyer show the other morning, and Tom Kitcher was on it, and they asked the financial impact to our county, and it's about $18 million to our county alone.
If they eliminate it, that's another $18 million that's going out of here.
That's a financial impact.
We could grow that with tourism. This is a growing thing because of Go shows on TV.
Mm-hmm.
I went out with our county forester, Dave Streeter, and a team, our Coyote Creek. We have county property that can be turned into some powerful tourism deals that help generate small business. It's already laying there. So if they take this away, we all lose the county properties, the private properties, and it's ridiculous. They have no science. So if you guys want more information on that, we got tons of them.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you,
sir. Have a good day.
Do we have a moment to sift through one scheduling matter?
Sure.
All right. As we were sitting here, I was thinking about me not being here on Tuesday. So this afternoon, Beecher and Mike went to Dutch Bros to talk about just three small remaining issues on the lease. For all I know, they've come back with a signed copy.
Okay.
And so, I mean, we're that close. I'm not telling you they have done that, but
I
would not be surprised.
So
what I had been planning to do, thank you for reminding me I'm not going to be here, I was going to bring the lease for you to review on Tuesday afternoon, and then I was going to simultaneously schedule it for the Wednesday business session.
We need to schedule for the Wednesday business session now, right?
I'm thinking we do. And so I've got to figure out a time between now and Wednesday when you guys can actually review the thing in an executive session. And
it'd have to be Tuesday.
So you know what you're signing.
Yeah.
So it does sound like it has to be Tuesday morning, I guess.
You might have to do that for us to have an executive session. If there was no issue, you know, that's your issue, if Leah's carrying the water.
Yeah, Leah, Mike can be there. You can meet just with Mike.
Yeah, let's just do that. We'll keep the executive session.
I guess Jenny wanted you there for the fire standards. That's why she wanted to push it.
We're doing fire standards again next Wednesday.
Or whatever.
Tuesday?
Yeah, something we pushed.
Yeah, we were supposed to review it and bring it back. And I think she's looking for a decision on it.
She wanted you there for that?
She wanted Wally there for that.
I just gave it to you as a recommendation.
Yeah. I can skip there. Okay. I think that's the plan as far as Dutch Bros then.
And let's have
everything continues
Tuesday,
on.
Let's keep the executive session on Tuesday. You know, if we need to catch up on anything on Thursday morning, we can put Lee back on there.
Yes, okay.
For catch up on admin on Thursday. And then get the door. I don't like having those two opportunities in the week to come.
Yeah, okay. It's working out.
I think so. But this week it worked out really well. Because, I mean, you guys said it was so long. So we had to move to the admin. Yeah. We didn't get out here until 11:30. I didn't feel like we rushed through it, but we were moving on it, so it's no stuff. Anyway, nothing else?
Nothing else.
Great. Glad we worked that out.
Good. When do you want to talk?
I'm ready. I'm ready if you're ready.
Let's do it right now.
Yep.
This weekend.
Nothing else? The board is adjourned.
Want me to go to your office? Because you